Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today we'll be doing part two of the show that I started last week, discussing how I developed my spirituality. I want to share a few anecdotes from my career that helped strengthen my spirituality and help me better understand perhaps how the world and beyond work. So I was thinking back to after I started as a pediatric resident, and in the first couple of years as a resident, I worked in a neonatal intensive care unit where we worked with babies who were very premature. And in those days, in the early 80s, we were pushing back the boundaries of babies who could survive. Back in the 1960s, when President Kennedy's baby was born at 32 weeks gestation, he passed away. But by the time I was a pediatric resident, babies were living, even if they were born at 24 or 25 weeks gestation, weighing maybe around a pound. And I wrote a story, a science fiction story, that actually got published in a medical journal called Baby Elijah's Misconception, that came about as I questioned about the ethics of helping babies so young to survive. And I recall this story, I realized I had made some spiritual assumptions that I already had at age, I must have been around 26, 27 years old at this time. So the story goes like this. Baby Elijah is waiting in the void, waiting to be born. He's lived several times before, but many of his lives had been cut short. One time he caught cholera and he died young. Another time he was aborted early in the pregnancy. Another time he was shot and just had a lot of misfortune. And he wanted to ensure that when he's going to be born this time, he'll have a long life and a long chance, a good chance of survival. So he decided to wait to be born until babies had a higher chance of surviving. And he watched how medicine progressed and neonatal intensive care units were developed and younger fetuses were able to survive if they were born young. And finally, he waited until the artificial placenta was developed, which is now in a future, hasn't occurred yet. And the artificial placenta would let any conceived baby survive without outside of the womb. And baby Elijah was very pleased to see this because now any baby that was conceived could live with the help of some technology. So at that point he filled out paperwork to be born, but for some reason he couldn't get to the front of the line. And he peered back on Earth and he saw what happened. What occurred was that every baby survived, including babies that would have been spontaneously aborted in the past, because they might have had a genetic abnormality or some other health issue. And so when they came to term and the families took those babies in, they required a lot of care, and therefore those families didn't want to have more children. And as a result, fewer children were being born, and unfortunately, baby Elijah knew how to solve this problem, but he couldn't even get born to help us deal with the issue. So that's the story, baby Elijah's misconception. What I find interesting looking back, besides the ethics of how young a baby should be allowed to survive, but the idea that we do have reincarnated lives as represented by baby Elijah. So now we're going to move forward in my medical practice. I became a pediatric pulmonologist. I work with patients with cystic fibrosis, as I described in the last show. And I work with other kids with respiratory problems. One of them was a young man by the name of DJ, who he was 12. When I met him, he had vocal cord dysfunction. That's a condition in which the vocal cords close when you're stressed, and it's tough to breathe when your vocal cords are closed over the airway. The typical cause of stress in these patients is stress caused in athletes who are trying to compete hard. And this was the case with this young man. I taught him how to calm himself with hypnosis, and typically vocal cord dysfunction resolves really easily once people learn how to calm themselves. It's typically one or two sessions of instruction, and then off they go. He was breathing fine. The same young man came back to see me 7 years later when he was 19, I believe, and I welcomed him to my office. I said, "What brings you back?" He said, "Well, I'm in college now. I'm having a great life. I'm an environmental science major. I have good friends." I said, "That's great. So nice to hear that. Why are you back?" He said, I thought I'd just catch up. You know, I'm in college now. I've made new friends." I'm saying, "Well, DJ, for real, why are you back?" He said, "I don't know why I'm back." So I said, "Well, let's ask your subconscious, if I might." He said, "Yes." And I talked to his subconscious through finger motion. And I asked the subconscious, "Did you want DJ to come back?" He said, "Yes." And I asked, "Do you know why?" And DJ said, "I remember. I asked my subconscious," he said, "whether I was going to die on December 21st, 2012. And actually, I should tell you the date when I was seeing him back. It was December 10th, so 11 days before December 21st, 2012. And the reason DJ even asked the question was because on that date, for those of you who remember, the Mayan calendar ended. The Mayan calendar, I think, was a 3,000-year calendar, and at that date, the calendar no longer progressed, and some people thought that the world might end. So DJ had asked, would he die on that date, and the subconscious said yes. That freaked him out, and that's why he came to see me. So I asked the subconscious, "Is he really going to die on December 21st? He said, "No, I just told him that because I wanted to come and see you." I said, "Okay, why?" And the subconscious replied, "DJ is going to undergo some sort of transition on December 21st. I said, "Okay." So I told DJ that he should talk to his subconscious over the next 10 days to find out what kind of transition will take place, and that I will see him on December 20th, the day before this is to occur, and then I'll schedule him to see him 2 days later, on December 23rd. So he comes back the day before, so December 20th, and he said, "What I learned is this is one of my subconscious's favorite transitions," whatever that means. And then he said, "I'm going to be confused by it." I said, "Okay, what am I supposed to do?" He said, you're supposed to guide me through it." I said, "I have no idea what's going to happen. How am I going to guide you through it?" He said, "Well, you already know what I'm going to learn." I said, "Okay. So, tell you what, tomorrow when you have the transition, please email me. I really want to know what occurs, and then we'll talk about it in a couple of days later." He said, "Fine." So he goes home, and the next day, December 21st, 2012, the world did not end, but also I did not get an email from DJ. Next day, December 22nd, no word. Next day, December 23rd, it's Sunday, I'm seeing patients, and an afternoon patient cancels, and I thought, "Well, let me call DJ and ask him to come in earlier because we might have a lot to talk about." So I call him, and his phone number is disconnected. So I email him, and the email bounces back. And I'm a little bit worried, what's this all mean? But I'm too busy to really think much about it. And finally, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, when the appointment was set, DJ walks in right on time, as he always did. "DJ, what happened? Why didn't your phone answer?" "Oh, I changed my number." "Well, what was wrong with your email?" "Oh, I got a new email address." "Oh, okay. So what happened with transition?" "Nothing happened." "Nothing happened," I say. "Nothing happened," he said. "I'm so confused." I said, "Let me talk to your subconscious." So, again, with the fingers, did the transition happen? Yes. Did DJ not realize that he had a transition? No. Am I supposed to help him figure out what the transition was? Yes. All right, DJ, tell me, what were you doing on Friday? Nothing. All I did was read a book. What was the book about? I say. It was called The Dharma Bums. The author was Jack Kerouac, he explained. I'd never heard of Jack Kerouac at that time, although he's quite a famous author, as it turns out. And the book is about Jack and his friend Joffrey walking around the countrysides having adventures. I said, tell to me in first person. Now, as I tell you this story, you'll notice I ask questions. I'm not quite sure where the questions come from. I think it's, well, I'm pretty sure they're from my subconscious because they somehow indicate I know a little bit more than I realize. So I asked him, tell me first person. And DJ says, well, we're walking in the countryside. We set up a campfire. I go into the woods by myself. When I get there, I see five paths. I'm not sure which path to take. And somebody comes up behind me and he says, take any of the paths. They all lead to the same place. So I do that, and I find myself in a green area, and people are following me. Then I cross the bridge to another area, people are following me some more, and then I go back to the campfire with Joffrey. And I said to DJ, that wasn't in the book. That was your transition. And DJ said, yeah, it was in the book. I read it. I said, no, it wasn't. Mind you, I've never heard of the book before. I never read the book, but I knew for sure, somehow, that this was not in the book. And I said, you go check the book out. And I asked the subconscious, was it in the book? He said, no. So DJ goes home. He comes back the next week. He says, you're right. This was not in the book. And he shows me the book. And the passage basically says, we set up a campfire. I went into the woods to meditate, and I came back. Nothing about paths, nothing about green areas. And teacher says, and I said to DJ, that was your vision, that was your transition. What does it mean, he says. I don't know, it sounds like maybe you're supposed to be a leader, because people are following you. I don't want to be a leader, he said. I'm not better than anybody else. And I said, well, you're not better than anyone else, but maybe you're further along the path. And he said, well, I can live with that. He said, well, why were there five paths? Why didn't it matter which path I took? I said, maybe because your intentions are pure, so no matter which path you take, you end up where you're supposed to go. And he says, but I don't want to be leader, though. I'm nervous about it. I said, well, you know, leaders are chosen, and maybe you're chosen. And I encourage him to perhaps read about Moses in the Bible, who was a reluctant leader of the Jewish people when God told him to go get them out of Egypt. So he goes home. And I'm thinking, whoa, that was kind of a strange interaction. How did I know it was in the book? And why did he have a transition or a vision around a passage, a seemingly random passage in the book? And slowly a suspicion is formulated in my mind. So when he comes back a week later, I said, before we start, I have a subconscious question. So did you plan this transition in advance? Subconscious says, yes. Did you plan it in a previous life? I said. Subconscious says, yes. I said, what's your relationship to the author, Jack Kerouac? The subconscious says, it is I. I am Jack Kerouac. I said, oh, you're saying that you're like a reincarnation of Jack Kerouac. Well, that kind of would make sense. I said, you wrote that passage for yourself. And then I said, oh, you know, this reminds me of an essay I wrote once. In fact, last week I told you about when I first encountered death, and with three people in 1 year, I had written an article about it. And in the article, I named the people's ages. I said 19, 23, and 62. And those numbers only mean something to me. And so I pulled out the article and shared it with him. And I said, if you say you're Jack Kerouac, let's find out about this gentleman. So we looked up Jack Kerouac. We found out that he was a beatnik. He wandered around countryside. He wrote stream of consciousness books. And he died in 1969 from liver disease that he contracted because he drank a lot of alcohol. And DJ says, I don't drink alcohol. And I said, well, maybe you learned your lesson or something. And then DJ says, well, wait a minute. I was Jack Kerouac died in 1969. I was born in 1994. What took him so long to come back? And he said, I don't know. I don't know how this stuff works. And I said, well, maybe there was a life between Jack Kerouac and you. So I asked his subconscious, was there a life between? He says, yes. And then I said, you know, in Indian tradition, souls travel together through reincarnations. So I wonder if I knew you in your last reincarnation. And I say to DJ subconscious, did I know you in your previous life? He said, yes. And I said, that's interesting. So it's somebody I knew that had died. And I said, is it one of the people in this article that I had written about the three people who died when I was a medical student? And he said, yes. And I said, are you a 23-year-old? 23-year-old was my classmate who died of liver cancer. He said, no, we had a 19-year-old. The 19-year-old was my friend Harry, who had cystic fibrosis, who got me on the road towards pulmonology. And he said, yes. So you say you're Harry, and now you're back. I didn't ask many more clarifying questions other than it suddenly dawned on me, is this how life works? That we meet guides that tell us, that direct us? Like, I realized at that moment that when I met Harry, I was 16, he was 12. Because of that encounter, I went into medicine and certainly pediatric pulmonology. And then later I met Paul, who moved me on the road to hypnosis. So I started thinking, and now maybe DJ / Harry are coming back and teaching me more. So I thought I'd be working a lot more with DJ and had more to teach me. But after that session, I only saw him like once more and then not again. I think he came back to teach me that lesson, and perhaps I taught him the lesson of his background. But it was this kind of interaction that taught me that, or reinforced the idea that there's reincarnation and that things aren't random, that there's some order to organization to this universe. But it was another patient that I met a few years later who really made it very clear to me that there's a lot more to this world than meets the eye. And so now I'm going to start telling you the story of this next patient, who I'm going to call Daniel, which is not his real name, but he's given me permission to tell his stories. And I have many stories to tell of him. I will probably only be able to tell a handful today. But each of his stories, to me, reinforces this idea that we are meant to meet certain people. Maybe we're meant to meet everybody we meet. I'm not sure about that. And that our role in life is to help each other. So this story begins in 2016, early 2016. And again, the date is relevant, as you'll find out. And I met Daniel when he was 13. He had stopped going to school suddenly. He had not slept for three nights when I met him. And when his parents asked him what was the matter, he hid under the kitchen table and would not answer. And I met him. We connected pretty quickly. I told him about positive talk, taught him how to calm himself with hypnosis, taught him how to allow the subconscious to interact with me, and pretty quickly figured out the problem was that his best friend had left him. Daniel was attending a Christian school, a very small school. He had 12 kids in his class, and his best friend distanced himself at the age of 13 because the friend kind of went wild, which some 13-year-olds do, and Daniel was more straight-laced, didn't want to go there, and so he had no friends. So we worked through that, and we discussed that he'll be going to ninth grade the next year, and he'll, in a public school, he'll have more opportunities to meet people. And within a month, he went back to school and was doing well. But he wanted to keep learning, and I enjoyed working with him. He was very talented with hypnosis, so not only could his subconscious talk to me with his fingers, but his subconscious could also talk with his voice. And like occurs with many patients who are gifted hypnosis, when the subconscious talks with their voice, they don't remember it later. So when I tell Daniel's story back to him, he often doesn't remember much of what occurred because he was in the subconscious mode when they occurred. So one time I was having a conversation with his subconscious, and I told him, you know, Daniel's really a pure kid. He's really good. He wants to help people to become a veterinarian. And the subconscious, you don't know how pure he is. When he was 4 years old, he had a dream that his grandfather came to see him. His grandfather had passed. And he told him, you have a very important mission in life, and you're very pure. But he said, don't tell Daniel this because I don't want it to go to his head. I said, okay. And then I kept it to myself that he had this dream. When we come back from this break, I have a little tidbit to share with you about Daniel's grandfather that illustrates perhaps some of the depth of his experiences before we met. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unberg.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Unberg to be published early 2025. Dr. Unberg's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Unberg's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Unberg's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit drunberg.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Unberg and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unberg. I'm telling some stories from my career that helped me develop spiritually. I'm telling a story about Daniel, who was very pure according to his grandfather, and Daniel actually told me about this grandfather, and he remembered being at his funeral, and that occurred when Daniel was 1 year old, and he remembered where people were seated and everything, except he was never at the funeral. And, you know, some doubters would say, well, you know, somebody told him about the funeral, and it became his memories, and I guess that's possible, but as you hear more of his stories, each of them more fantastic than the others. I don't know, I've basically taken him at his word. He also knows when he was around four, he saw his grandfather's watch in his father's safe, and he asked, is that this watch that my grandfather wore? And was told yes, but he had never been told before that was the watch. He recognized it. So the summer of 2016 came, and Daniel was off to horseback riding camp, and also he went to Colorado with his father and uncles. And he came back from Colorado and he said, you know, when I was in Colorado, I thought I could control nature. With my thoughts, I thought I could make it the wind blow in a particular direction, the rain to start, lightning to strike. And whenever that happened, I felt a tingling in the back of my neck. And I said, oh, that's kind of interesting. I don't know if you could control nature, but maybe you knew what was about to happen and you thought you could control it. And maybe the tingling in the back of your neck was your connection with nature. And I said, you know, this reminds me of the story of Moses in the Bible. So in the Bible, Moses is tending to his sheep and he sees this bush that's burning, but it's not being consumed. And he goes to check it out. And there God speaks to him and says, go to Egypt and help my people go. And I said, maybe you saw something weird in nature and that was God calling you in some fashion. Keep that in mind. So then Daniel goes to horse camp. And I had suggested to him that he might want to do a hypnosis with the horses. I got that idea because I've heard of horse whisperers who seem to talk to horses and the horses respond. So I figured maybe Daniel, who loved horses, could get a similar response. He came back from horse camp and said, yes, I was able to do hypnosis with horses. I could hear them really well, and they could hear me. And to this day, Daniel will talk to horses. He is going to become a veterinarian. And he will do things like talk to an injured horse and calm them down. I guess he's become a horse whisperer in his own right. And he said, at the end of horse camp, we had a candle lighting ceremony. All the kids stood around in a circle, and they talked about what the camp meant to them. And I noticed, he said, after each kid talked, I saw this colored light in front of them, red, blue, green. What do you think those lights were? And I said, I don't know. What do you think? Or asked, what does subconscious think? And subconscious said, these were their souls. You know, some people talk about auras. Maybe it's the same thing, but he was seeing something. He said, it wasn't the candles because we hadn't lit them yet. And I said, then that's really cool. You seem to have these abilities to see things. I said, next time you go to horse camp, which was going to be a week later, find out about the spiritual life of horses. So he came back a couple weeks later. He said, I found out. The spiritual life of horses is full of gratitude, except for the horses who have been abused, who always say, why, why, why? And I thought about it, in religion, a lot of it is about gratitude, and then we ask, why do bad things happen to good people? So that was the prelude to the stories that I'm going to follow. So the first one that's really changed my mind about how things might work occurred on September 12th, 2016. The date is important here. Daniel emailed me, said, I became really nervous yesterday. I'm not sure why. I couldn't calm myself with hypnosis, and my subconscious wouldn't tell me what's going on. So I said, well, come on in. Let's talk. So he came in, and I said, let me talk to your subconscious. Do you want me to talk through your fingers or with your voice? And I offered the voice option because if his subconscious doesn't want to know what is going on, he would talk to me. Daniel said, I want to talk with my fingers. I said, okay. So I said, oh, that's right. He told me when he came in, I think the problem was test anxiety. When I got to school and I found out that my exams were postponed for the day, I felt much better. And I said to him, I don't know that we test anxiety because if it was, your subconscious could have told you that. And you could have calmed yourself. And I asked the subconscious, was it test anxiety? He said, no. I said, did he make himself nervous? He said, no. I said, did you make him nervous? He said, no. I said, did somebody else make him nervous? He said, yes. I said, is it somebody he knows or is around him? He said, no. So I guess you've known me long enough from my stories that my next question might be obvious, which was this a past life? He said, yes. And are we supposed to find out who you were? He said, yes. So I said, were you under 20 years of age? He said, no. And then Daniel says he was around 40. And I'm thinking, why would a 40-year-old past life make him nervous out of the blue? It took me about 10 seconds to figure out that the nervousness started the day before September 11th. Did you die on September 11th? Yes. Are we supposed to figure out who you are? Yes. So at this point, I'm going to tell what happened in the story, but I'm going to keep it a little bit vague because I'm still trying to protect the identity of the person who came next. So he said, we're supposed to figure out who this was, and I said, does this person die in the Twin Towers? No. Did they die in the Pentagon? No. Did they die in Flight 93? Yes. Daniel says, what's Flight 93? I said, that's the flight that crashed on September 11th near Pittsburgh. And so I looked up the passenger manifesto for Flight 93, and I said, be the captain. No. So there's like 42 passengers, excluding the hijackers, and I didn't know how I would figure out who it was. I saw there were birthplaces. So I asked, were you born in New Jersey? No. Were you born in California? No. Pretty soon we figured out what the state was. And there were two people who were born in that state, and he identified as being one of these people. And I asked, well, were you under 40? Yes. Were you 39? No. Were you 38? Yes. Well, that's interesting. That's the age of the person he identified. And then I thought, maybe I'm cueing you in some fashion. What was your wife's name? And he comes up with her name. I said, whoa, that's really weird. How many kids did you have? He said, three. No, that's not right. I said, he said four, excuse me. I said, that's not right. There's three kids listed in this biography. What company did you work for? Now, in the biography, it said the name of the company. And he says, well, the company worked for something like, did something with the Army or the military, and the name of the company was, and he named the first half of the name. And I said, where are you getting this from? I don't know, he said. It's just coming to my mind. I said, that's amazing. That's crazy. He said, was this company in a particular city in California? I said, how do you know that? That's where this person lived. I don't know. I said, well, you know what? Either you read an awful lot about this 9/11 victim, or you're his reincarnation. When you come back, I'll tell you the rest of this story. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anwer.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident.
a new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. I'm telling Daniel's story that he identified, or his subconscious identified himself as a survivor from 9/11. And Daniel seemed to know an awful lot about this individual, either because he read about it, about him, or maybe because the person had come back through him. And I said, hey, what do you want? I want to send a message to my wife. And I said, this is 15 years after 9/11. This would be kind of strange to contact her. And we decided we'll publish a message in the newspaper or something like that. So we brought Daniel's mother into the room, and we told her the story, and she started to cry. And why are you crying? I always considered him my 9/11 baby. What do you mean? He was born in July of 2002. She said, yes, he was very hard to conceive. He was conceived in September of 2001, and all the babies that were born in July of 2002 were thought to be 9/11 babies. I said, oh, what a coincidence. Or not. So he goes home. And I start reading about the person he identified, and it turned out to be he's one of the more famous victims of 9/11. He was one of the people who rushed the cockpit on Flight 93, and his wife actually wrote a book about this. And if the listeners really dig hard, they'll figure out who I'm talking about. I'm again protecting the name here. I got the book. No, before I tell you about the book, I ordered the book. There was also transcripts of his phone conversations from the plane with his wife before the plane crashed. A lot of the passengers were allowed to talk to their loved ones. And in the phone conversation, he tells his wife he's going to rush the cockpit, and she tells him to be careful. He asks to pay for him, and she said she loves him. And then they hung up, and then the plane crashed 10 minutes later. So when I see Daniel a couple days later, I said, are you channeling this person, or is he your soul? He says, my soul. Okay. Are you going to dictate this letter to me, to his wife? He said, or do you want to type it? He said, I'll type it. So we get in front of the computer, and again, when the subconscious types, typically people don't remember that either, and he writes a letter. And dear wife, using her name, I know that you must have prayed for me, because after we talked, I felt very calm. I want you to know that I miss you and the girls, but we need to bring down the plane to save a lot of people in the White House. I want you to know the last thing I saw before I died was your beautiful face, and I heard the girls laughing. And he said, I love you for always, spelled A-L-L-W-A-Y-S, love, and he used his name. And so when Daniel came out of hypnosis, he did not recognize the letter, and he was impressed by it, and we had to decide if we were going to mail the letter or not. I then got the book that the wife had written and read the story, and I'll tell you that the story over, you know, this, she told the story that before 9/11, this family was concerned something bad was going to happen someday, and then one of their children was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. At that point, I put the book down because, you know, as you know, I took care of people with cystic fibrosis for many years, and I really felt that this was somehow connected to me in a way. And then it turned out it wasn't really a diagnosis. Cystic fibrosis was a mistake, and the child was fine, but ever since I donated money to the CF Foundation. This was on top of when I'd asked Daniel the day before, when he first came to see me with anxiety, I'd asked him, are you nervous every 9/11? He said, no, just this year. And when asked why, his subconscious says, because you're around to interpret. So I sort of felt connected to this story. So that was, I'm not even telling the whole story because I'm trying to keep it fairly anonymous. That was a story that made me think, wait a minute, is this representing, again, a different kind of reality? So, again, I had a number of other interesting interactions with this one patient. The story I'm going to tell you next was when he started being chased by demons. And the background was this. So his mother was away, and he told me that he was brushing his teeth, and then he opened the cabinet under the sink to get the mouthwash out, and a blue orb came out and passed him, and he felt it was evil. And the next day, he woke up, and he found scratches on his upper arm, and he didn't know where they were from. And he took a shower, and then scratches appeared on his legs. And he asked me, what do you think these are from? And I said, I don't know. The night before, I'd actually been channel surfing, and I came across a horror movie that I just flipped through because I don't like horror movies. And when he told me the story, the only thing I could think of is something horrible. And I said to his subconscious, what do you think it is? And Daniel said, maybe it's witches or demons. And we asked the subconscious, he said, no, not that. But then later Daniel says, what are archdemons or archdemons? I said, I don't know. I guess they're opposite of archangels. I don't study this stuff. And he sort of inspects the internet and he says, okay, I found him. I'm being followed by Belial, Satan, Leviathan, and Lucifer, which, as far as I was concerned, was random demons. I later learned they travel in a pack through medieval times. They often travel together. And at that point, he started seeing these demons following him in the shadows. They were wearing, one was wearing a white suit, one was a dark suit, black suit, one a red suit, and one was wearing disheveled clothes. When he started telling me these stories, I decided to call a psychiatrist to find out, am I dealing with somebody with psychosis or some really bad psychiatric problem? And the psychiatrist asked me, well, how is he doing in school? I said, he's doing great in school. He's a straight-A student. He's in marching band. Life is good. And the psychiatrist says, well, there's no psychiatric diagnosis that applies because it's not affecting his life. And, you know, you keep working with him because I wouldn't know how to respond to these kind of stories he's telling you. And I said, great, I want to work with him. You know, I've talked since to Daniel, and as you'll hear, we worked through the demons and other adventures, that if he had been seen by a psychiatrist when I first met him, when he wasn't going to school and wasn't sleeping and wasn't answering questions, somebody could have diagnosed him as being psychiatrically disturbed, put him on antipsychotics, and derailed his life. And, I think that this young man is amazing. He's got talents, and I think that psychiatry actually pathologizes people like him, unfortunately, because we just don't understand where such visions come from. But as you'll see from the story of the demons, you can follow the logic and you can make them go away with logic. So I told Daniel that I'd had very little experience with demons. In my 25 years of doing hypnosis, there were a couple of other incidents of this type where something really strange was going on. But the way I've learned to deal with them is find out what they want and address it. So after being wary for a while, he said, okay. And once a week, we talked to a demon. So the first demon we talked to was Belial. He was the man in the disheveled clothes. And we asked Belial, do you want? He said, I feel worthless, which is an interesting thing for him to say, because in Hebrew, I knew Belial means worthless. Daniel is a Christian boy who never studied Hebrew, and is some of religious education, according to him, is learning about happy Jesus stories in Sunday school. So I suggested to Daniel that he imagine dressing Belial in a fancy suit, and Belial was happy and left and wasn't seen again. So that was pretty easy. And the next week, we decided to take on Satan, who was the second demon, and I asked the subconscious of Daniel, what does Satan want? And he said, Satan wants to make a deal what kind of deal. He wants to know what Daniel would like in exchange for his soul. So I said to Daniel, what would you like in exchange for your soul? And he said, I don't want anything in exchange for my soul. I don't want to make a deal with the devil. And I said, well, let me play devil's advocate, which I said without meaning to be ironic, but it was in the setting, pretty ironic. I said, in exchange for your soul, if Satan would spare 10,000 lives in a future war, would you make the deal? And Daniel said, I probably would. And actually, I've asked this question many times of many people, and there's two kinds of people. There's people who will say, yeah, I might do that, and other people said, absolutely not. And I think the most caring people will consider these questions. And I said to Daniel, no, it's not a fair deal. I said, 10,000 lives is not equal a soul, because a soul is forever, and lives, you know, you live once, and then you can live again. So one, it's not a fair deal. So then I said, okay, in exchange for your soul, Satan will free 1,000 innocent souls. Would you make that deal? And Daniel thinks, he says, yeah, I'd make that deal. It sounds like a good deal. And I said, no, it's not a good deal. It's not a deal for you to make. You're not in the soul realm right now. And then I say, does Satan have a deal to offer? Subconscious, yes. What's the deal? In exchange for Daniel's soul, Satan would promise never to return to earth again. Daniel considers for a moment, nope, I don't trust him. I don't believe he'll stand up to the deal. And I said, well, it's a deal you shouldn't make anyway, because who are you to make that deal? Who are you to banish Satan, even if you could, from earth forever? If God wanted to banish Satan, he could have done so. And then we had a discussion about why God allows Satan to be around, and we talked about how having evil in the world gives us a chance to exercise free will by doing good and not choosing to do evil. So without badness, can there really be goodness? So we had this kind of philosophical discussion, and then Daniel said to Satan, no deal. And Satan said, whatever, disappears and never seen again. And Satan was the man in the red suit. The following week was Leviathan. So Leviathan was a man in a black suit. As you may know, Leviathan is also the name of a legendary sea monster that's actually mentioned in the Bible a few times. What do you want, Leviathan? I asked. I want to kill the kid. Why do you want to kill Daniel? I want to kill many people. Why do you want to kill many people? I want God to come down and fight me. Why do you want God to fight you? I want revenge against God. Why do you want revenge against God? God killed my sister. Your sister? Who was your sister? Well, she was another Leviathan. Well, why did God kill your sister? He didn't want there to be baby Leviathans. Why did he not want to have baby Leviathans? And he says, well, this is how it worked. The animals were created first, then mankind was created, and God wanted all the animals to serve man, but I didn't want to do that. And I said, okay, well, I understand maybe why God didn't want baby Leviathans, but it sounds like a pretty miserable existence. Oh, I asked him, so if you killed all of mankind, would you be happy? He said, no, I'd still be miserable and God would be angry. And I said, that's a pretty bad existence. Can't you think of something more redemptive to do? And Leviathan says, like what? I said, I don't know, ask God what you need to do to redeem yourself. And aren't you a creature of the ocean? He says, yes. I said, why don't you protect a species of fish from going extinct, or protect the oceans from mankind, because man has not been kind to the ocean. And Leviathan says, God says, like the story of Cain and Abel, I need to give him something precious. Now, for those of you who don't know the story of Cain and Abel from the Bible, they were the sons of Adam and Eve. And one day, Cain decided he was going to give God a sacrifice of some dried fruit, and Abel took his choicest young sheep and was going to offer that as a sacrifice to God. And God took Abel's sacrifice, but not Cain's. And then Cain later grew jealous and killed Abel in the first murder recorded in the Bible. And but the point was that Cain didn't give something precious. So Leviathan says, all right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to protect the fish and the sailors. And as my precious gift to God, I'm going to give him the silver necklace that my sister used to wear. And I said, that's nice. And he said, and Daniel says, I see the necklace. Okay? And there's writing on it. I said, what does it say? He says, I can't read it. It's in Hebrew. So I take out a Google letter chart, and I ask Daniel to point to the letters on the chart. And there's five letters, and I knew immediately what it said. The first letters stood for number 36. And I explained to Daniel that 36 is a very special number. First, I explained, this is mentioned in Talmud. The Talmud is a book compiled, or a series of books compiled between the years 400 and 800 A.D. that interprets the Bible. They take one verse of Bible and interpret it. This is the Jewish Bible. And so there's rabbis commenting around it, and then rabbis in later generations commented and other rabbis comments. And it's a document that's 6,200 pages long. And then in Talmud, there's a story about number 36. And the gist of the story is, at any given time, there are 36 righteous people living on earth, and because of them, God does not destroy the earth again, just like he had destroyed the earth when Noah was alive with the great flood. And the rest of the necklace, back to Leviathan's necklace, said the word pure in Hebrew. I remember Daniel was pure in the past. And I said, 36 pure doesn't sound like a bad necklace. And Leviathan says, well, my sister would never have killed anyone. I was the one who was going to kill people. And then Leviathan says, well, God says I can keep the necklace as long as I wear it. And so then he turns into a horrible-looking sea monster, according to my patient, and dives into the ocean. And the patient goes, ooh, and I said, you should love him. He's one of God's creatures. So after that day, I had a lot of questions. First of all, this was like a mythic level story. And I was trying to figure out, how is it that Daniel saw Hebrew if he's never studied it, and that I interpreted what it meant. And then I made some other interesting discoveries. I went on the internet, and I found out the story of Leviathan is also in the Talmud. And it says in Talmud that God killed the female Leviathan. It doesn't say it's a sister. Nothing about a silver necklace. And in the Talmud, there's also, Leviathan is mentioned a few times in the context of the holiday of Sukkot. Sukkot is a harvest holiday that occurs in the fall. And it says in the modern Orthodox Jewish liturgy for Sukkot, it says, in the last day of time, at the end of times, all the righteous people will eat, and the last Sukkot will be covered by the skin of Leviathan. Leviathan, what does that have to do with Sukkot? But there it is. And then I found out something really interesting. I told you there's 6,200 pages of Talmud divided in books and chapters and sections. There's one section of the holiday of Sukkot. And number 36 story I told you about earlier is in the same section as the Sukkot story. So these two elements were told 1,500 years ago by the rabbis, and this 14-year-old kid is telling to me now. How does that work? Last discovery was the modern-day Hebrew for Leviathan is Leviathan. Hebrew word is Leviathan, which also starts with number 36, and the rest of the word spells will be given. 36 will be given. 36 righteous people. And that's the story of Leviathan, and Leviathan was never seen again. We'll come back with the last demon after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unbar. The last demon story. Very quickly, our show is running along because these stories are so hypnotic. This was Lucifer. What do you want, Lucifer? I want to fight the kid. Why do you want to fight him? What do you do? What's your day job? He says, I command armies of hell, but there's nothing else to do. And I said, well, I don't know if it's a good idea for you to fight the kid. I said, how'd you get your name? He says, my name means bringer of light. And what happened to you? He said, well, contrary to popular belief, I did not try to take over heaven. What happened was that God created man, and he wanted all the angels to to bow down to man. And I was God's most handsome and beautiful angel, and I didn't want to bow down to an inferior man, so God threw me out. And I said, well, I don't think it's a good idea for you to fight the kid. I don't like this idea of my patient fighting Lucifer. And then the patient says, wait, somebody just gave me a sword, and there's writing on it. What does it say? I can't read it. It's in Hebrew. So out comes a letter chart, and he points the letters. And the letter in Hebrew is a transliteration of Lucifer in Hebrew. That's sort of strange. And I said, well, I still don't think it's a good idea. And the kid says, oh, somebody gave me a larger sword. And what does it say? And there's writing on it. What does it say? I can't read it. It's Hebrew. And then he freehands it for me. He doesn't point to the letter chart. And I'm looking at it. It doesn't make any sense because the last letter in the word he wrote never occurs in the last position of a Hebrew word. And I said, it doesn't make sense. He says, maybe I'm getting it backwards. Turned out he was reading left to right, but Hebrew is written right to left. So when I reversed the word, it said Michael, the archangel Michael. Michael's the one who replaced Lucifer in the lore. I said, I don't know where this is heading, but ask God what you should do. And Daniel says, God says I should fight him, but not kill him. We don't do that. You're up to fighting Lucifer? He says, yes. I said, okay. So Daniel sits across from me, closes his eyes, and he starts breathing very quickly and deeply. And I'm a pulmonologist, and after watching this for a couple minutes, I'm getting uncomfortable. He's going to hyperventilate. So I approach him. I put my hand on his hand, and I pass some energy, strength to strengthen him. After half a minute, he opens his eyes. He says, I swung my sword. His sword broke in two, and he ran off. I said, wow, you know, you fought for a few minutes. A few minutes, he said, I fought for hours. And later I learned that the battle between Michael and Lucifer is known throughout the Middle Ages. There's even artwork showing this battle between Archangel Michael and Lucifer. And we seem to have reenacted it in the office. And again, how does he see Hebrew with the word Lucifer or Michael within the context of what's going on? Those experiences and many more with Daniel and other patients have galvanized my thinking that there's a lot more to the world than meets the eye. Hope you found these stories interesting. Hope they give you food for thought. And I'm sure there'll be more, and I'll keep you posted. So everyone, I wish you an excellent week. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.